I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
A good Monday afternoon to all of you in and around D.C. or all over the country listening via the Radio.com app. Grant Paulson, Danny Ruye with you on 106.7 The Fan. How about that for a sports weekend, Ruye?
Not bad. Not bad, my friend. I hate that shootout loss to their rival Pittsburgh Penguins. But other than that, splendid sporting weekend, my friend. The foosball games were as advertised. Outstanding stuff. That was one of the best sports weekends of the year.
Caps Pens game before the 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock NFL games. I mean, who drew that up?
Yeah, what an appetizer. Just so sharp. The for years, and I couldn't prove this with any kind of data, but I always used to, my pops and I used to get tickets from a buddy of his, and we would go to the Caps Pens New Year's Day game. I feel like for six straight years, they used to play on New Year's Day, and it was like this weird tradition that no one ever talked about, but the Caps would woodshed Pittsburgh a bunch of times on those New Year's Day games. It was always really, really fun. I felt like they were 4-2 or 5-1 in all those years that I went. And I always loved that, kind of that, you know, weird start time. But it's descended to something else. But what a nice thing for us. A good appetizer for the folks in the Washington, D.C. area to watch that gem of a game right into the playoffs.
A little tuna tartare for my guy Danny Ruye.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I'm a little bit more of a fried food appetizer guy. Maybe a buffalo wing right out of the fryer, perhaps some mozzarella sticks or maybe some potato skins. But it was perfect. Just a great day of couch sitting. Yesterday reminds me, though, in this way, having kids and like being part of a family and something bigger than yourself, it is wonderful and amazing, and I'm not going to say that it's not, but yesterday did remind me of this would have been the best day ever if I was like 25 again and single.
Yeah.
And it's or just dating my wife or whatever. Like, let's just say we don't have kids, but even though she kind of does a lot of the stuff and lets me do nothing, and so if she heard me complaining about, you know, the fact that I have kids now or whatever, she would roll her eyes and think it's ridiculous. Because, like, yesterday kind of was normal for me, but there's still that back-of-your-head guilt a little bit. You know what I mean? There's still the, I guess it's a commercial break. Let me go check on everybody.
Of course.
Would have been really nice to just be 25 and all by myself again yesterday.
Not accountable for the food that I'm eating, nobody making any sounds. Maybe drinking beers and not falling asleep at 4:15 p.m., because I'm old and frail and fragile. All those kinds of things. Would have been fun. Watch the game with your pals. And by the way, pretend there's no pandemic, too. Wouldn't that be cool? Hey, we're getting together to watch the game. Cool. I'll be there in the same room as somebody else and not worry about anything.
Shootout loss to the Penguins was painful. You mentioned that. But out of a possible 6 points in three games so far, the Caps have five. So hard to be overly disappointed. They get another shot at Pittsburgh tomorrow. I want to talk about them still taking too many penalties. Todd Reardon's gone, and they've taken 10 minors in the last
so many
games
penalties.
Still. He was supposedly the problem, right? He wasn't either coming down on them enough or disciplined enough with his coaching. And now you've got Peter Laviolette, small sample, but that problem hasn't been fixed. We could talk about that with Mike Vogel coming up in the Beltway Blitz today at 4 o'clock. But we got to start with what's going to carry us. I mean, it's a football Monday. We had four games over the weekend, some great football, Saturday and Sunday doubleheaders, both treated us well. So let's just go through these games in order here as they were played chronologically. We'll start with the Rams and the Packers. Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay are on to the NFC Championship game. This game was closer than the 32-18 score, but there was never a minute where I didn't think the Packers were going to win. Now, whatever they needed to do, they were able to. When they had to run the ball, they could. Aaron Jones went for 99 and a touchdown on just 14 carries. Jamal Williams went for 65 on 12 attempts. You know, A.J. Dillon in six carries was a thumper and powerful and made that draft pick look decent at times. And then Aaron Rodgers threw for nearly 300 yards on a frigid day at Lambeau Field in inclement weather with a couple of touchdowns. It was a game in which the number one scoring offense in the league, Green Bay, was playing the number one scoring defense in the league, and the advantage was unequivocally to the Packers. Like, they took their foot off the gas, but Danny, they ran for 188, they racked up 484, and Rodgers, for the second time in his career, orchestrated an offensive effort for 30 or more points against the number one defense in the league in the playoffs. When he's played great defenses, he's normally come out on top.
Two stories. One is that one, the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. His demise, much exaggerated, maybe playing the best football of his career as he gets really close to 40. The other is the Aaron Donald factor. I hate when games are decided via injury or, you know, just a guy just can't go. He clearly wasn't right, in and out of the lineup early on. Later in the game, just basically couldn't play as that one progressed, which is a real shame. That may be the best player in the NFL. I know quarterbacks always get the praise and they get the attention. Rightfully so, they do so much. But I don't know that anybody's better at their respective position or job than Aaron Donald is. Him not being a factor really changed everything to me for the Rams. Because you said it, I was stunned at how effective that running game was for Green Bay. They've been able to run the ball when they felt like it at times over the years. Aaron Jones is an absolute star, has that huge 60-yarder to change kind of his eye line in terms of his day. Jamal Williams was effective. You mentioned Dillon in some bursts as well, coming downhill with some power running. But they're getting through holes. They were creating room. There were running lanes, and all it took was maybe one break tackle, a broken tackle, or a guy falling forward. They were picking up good, solid yardage. And that's kind of what stunned me. I thought that Green Bay would be able to get theirs a little bit in the passing game because Rodgers and Davante Adams are too good. You can't just have Jalen Ramsey follow him everywhere. They're going to come up with something, some schemes. You saw that on that one touchdown. The motion left. Now wait, no, motion right. Now motion back to the left. And now we're running all the way across. And Ramsey couldn't keep up. Just genius type design. But Green Bay being able to run the ball like they did, GP, kind of made me do one of those GIF type reactions where you're going, damn, that was really impressive how they moved the line of scrimmage.
26-6 in two regular seasons now under Matt LaFleur, who for the second time in 2 years has Green Bay in the NFC Championship game. Pretty amazing. They lost last year to San Francisco. They actually got bludgeoned. They were supposed to lose in that game. They were on the road. I think Aaron Rodgers is Packers, if you want to do QB record, 1-3 in the NFC title game. And I'm pretty sure all but one of those games have been on the road for him. They get to host Tampa Bay, though, spoiler alert. And it's going to be ugly. I mean, it's cold. They're talking about 1 to 3 inches of snow on game day and maybe during the game, which, by the way, I hope it snows at Lambeau and in Kansas City. I think that would be awesome to watch inclement weather football all weekend and all Sunday long. But yeah, Green Bay is on to the NFC title game, and congratulations to Matt LaFleur, the former Washington assistant. Pretty amazing. If Green Bay beats Tampa, it will be the third straight year that the NFC team is coached by one of the assistants that I covered in my time on the beat in D.C.
It's amazing. It's uncanny.
And not to make this about me at all, but I mean, it was just, it's cool for me because I got to know those guys so well. Like, Mike Shanahan's doing his own thing mostly. Those guys are either my age in the case of McVay or a little bit older than me. But if I had, you know, a dollar for every hour I spent with those guys, you know, on the road or wherever at league events or what have you, I mean, those guys kind of help coach me up on football, and I just think so highly of them. So it's really cool to see that they've thrived since leaving here. A couple of other nuggets fresh out of the oven here on this game for you. So you got the Packers. Speaking of LaFleur's acumen, how about their first 15 scripts? They're the number one scoring offense in the NFL. We talked about that. But their scoring percentage on opening drives this year was number one at 81% of the time they got points, and they did in this
Amazing.
Game. With that field goal, you add their points up. They're at 73 points on opening drives, the most ever by a team in over 20 years in the National Football League. Pretty cool. And then on Aaron Rodgers, twice now Aaron Rodgers has led a team to 30 or more, as I mentioned, against the number one defense. But how about the fact that he's thrown two or more touchdowns in 8 straight playoff games? That also ties the all-time record.
And that run he had, that's just one of those – their best kid is better than your best kid, you know, high school football style. He didn't have the angle. He was beat on that play. That was good defense. Everything was called. And he rolls out and sold me, the camera guy, and everybody all the way up to section 450 with that pump fake, runs it in. Just a absolute master at the quarterback position. He's so calm. He is completely unflappable. A lot of guys come around there and do that, you know, Baker Mayfield, you know, sort of peel back foot, throw it somewhere, maybe out of the end zone. You don't want to take a sack. Rodgers just like, you know, sort of like McConaughey in Days to Confuse. Like, I'll just pump fake right here, man. Hit it to the end zone. Just casual. So easy for him. Amazing.
Couple things on the Rams before we move on. I think they found something in Cam Akers, don't you?
100%.
He's 100%. Awesome.
He can play.
He was the second round pick this year for the Rams out of Florida State, I believe. 90 yards on 18 carries with a touchdown. And after the game, did you see Jared Goff's comments or Sean McVay's comments about the other? There is something afoot between those two guys. And yes. I guess more than anything, really, it is that now McVay is no longer necessarily just defending Goff at every turn. He was asked about the future, and he made it seem like they're evaluating everything. And in the past, he's made it very clear that Jared Goff is their quarterback. He said something along the lines of, he is our quarterback right now. So there's now a question going into this offseason. He's got 4 years left on the 6 years he was under contract for, and it's a massive contract. So I'm not even sure how they could get out of it or what they'd have to do. But the door is open for the first time that they might consider doing something other than just starting Jared Goff at the beginning of next year, which makes a lot of sense to me because he has been, for them, a weakness now, a weak link for the last couple of years with an otherwise Super Bowl-built type team.
Quick point of reference, if they were to move on from Jared Goff after the season, just they wouldn't, but just let's for the sake of argument, if they were to cut him, that's a $65.2 million dead cap hit. That's for 2021. In 2022, that lowers to $30,900,000. Again, they can't do anything. They're stuck with Jared Goff, and I don't think he's any good. I really think every inch they get is schemed up. I guess. Good luck. What are you going to get?
Another quarterback. I don't know which team it is, but he's better than teams that have bad quarterbacks. You know, maybe they say this guy has put up some numbers. I don't know. I'm not saying they're going to be able to, but I think they're going to try to. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Also, I don't know that you could just have him on your bench. Like, they liked John Wolford more at the end of the season, which is crazy. He was an XFL and an AAF quarterback or whatever. You can't just start him in September and have Goff behind him making all that money. But they made their bed. You know, they paid him. They didn't have to. And now they're finding out the hard way that maybe he's not the guy that gets them where they want to go. The second game on Saturday, nightcap, Bills onto the AFC Championship game. Stop there for a second. How cool is that? The Buffalo Bills are in the Final Four. They are back in the AFC title game. Everyone knows like one Bills fan, and they love the Bills, and they're diehard Bills fan, and they've had nothing to cheer about for so long. And you can make the case in the grand scale, they've had nothing to cheer about ever because that team has been your lovable losers that could just never finish what they started in the Super Bowl. But they beat the Ravens handily, 17-3. The Lamar Jackson postseason saga continues. He threw his first ever red zone interception, had 49 touchdowns without one before just an egregiously bad rookie in his first game kind of throw that was returned 101 yards for a touchdown. In that game, though, the Bills defense, which I have maligned and didn't think was good enough to win them a game, basically put the club on their back and said, we're going to the AFC Championship game, all aboard.
Two people. Luke Russert, my friend Clay, like the Buffalo Bills. So happy for those two guys. That's all I know, but you're 100% right. They haven't had much to cheer about for a very, very long time. I mean, how fluky is this? If you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, you're kicking yourself this morning. Because things that don't ever happen, you touched on one of them. Lamar Jackson has never done that. I don't mean like, oh, he has never done that once. So, of course, the thing that he's never done happened, where he threw a red zone interception and it goes back 101 yards. That's a 14-point swing right there. Justin Tucker, who does not miss field goal kicks, missed two field goal kicks. Now, the wind is swirling, and that was the dominant factor in the game. I think it hurt both teams passing, even Buffalo's especially, where you look at what would have been a walk-in touchdown, Allen to Diggs. The ball flutters and then flies, you know, 7-8 yards away from Diggs. That would have been an easy touchdown. So it affected everybody, I think. But the difference in the game, a guy that never misses field goals misses two, and a guy that never throws red zone picks threw one. They're right there at a minimum. is 13 points or 9 points. And then Buffalo doesn't get their second touchdown. So you're winning 12-10. The point is missed opportunities for Baltimore. But Buffalo, you're 100% right. Defensively was the story of this game. I thought offensively, even with the win, even with the bad conditions, they'd be able to do more. Credit Baltimore secondary. I thought Mumphrey was outstanding. And their quarterbacks, I thought, did an outstanding job for the most part in this game. I don't think Cole Beasley even had a catch, if memory serves. Really, really good job. Defensive struggle in this one, but Buffalo made one more huge play, and that was the difference.
Yeah, Taron Johnson had the pick six, and Tre'Davious White is one of the best corners in football to help lead the way in that secondary, to your point. You mentioned that Tucker never does that. Factually, he never has. He missed two kicks in a game once. Both were longer than 50. He's never before missed two kicks inside of 50 like he did in this game, leaving those points on the field. For the Bills, they ran the ball twice in the first half, didn't even try to run it. And in fact, on their first 50 plays before garbage time, they ran the ball six times out of those 50 plays. Now, their offense wasn't humming up and down the field. They were making enough plays to stay on the field, though, in their short and intermediate passing game. But pretty neat to see them decide, you know what, our best offense against this defense is spreading them out with our wide receivers, and our best thing is Josh Allen making decisions for us. If that means scrambling and getting seven, you do that. If that means throwing for five or eight, you do that. And so they decided to go with what got him there. Stephon Diggs coming over via trade for Minnesota, a deal that
so good.
Ultimately could work for both teams beautifully. I don't remember a trade that has, in its first year, looked so good for both organizations. But Diggs, the first Bill since Thurman Thomas to catch a touchdown in consecutive playoff games, the first wide receiver since 2011 and just the sixth in the 2000s to go for 100 yards and a touchdown in both of his first two playoff games. He's done that over the last couple of weeks. Josh Allen is all grown up, man, and this is this is going to be what he does for a while, I think. No one like he lit it up, you know, threw for 206 and a touchdown, but the year he's had, he's going to finish on the podium very likely, you know, third behind Rodgers and Mahomes in the MVP race. He and Buffalo are on to the AFC Championship game to take on Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. The Chiefs, who we'll get to, are going to the AFC title game for a third straight year. But this, to me, is pretty sustainable for the Bills.
Yep.
We'll be talking about them a lot today, but I don't see with their head coaching situation, Sean McDermott, their front office, Brandon Bean, they're really, really well put together. And the contracts that they've got for young players, it's going to be a window for 4 or 5 years maybe where they could run the AFC East. On the flip side, the Ravens, it seems like year in and year out, they could make a Super Bowl run. They're good enough to be the last team standing, and it has not worked yet. Now, the hot takers were out in full effect after Saturday night. You know, Lamar Jackson can't win in the playoffs. He can't win the big game. And I don't do that at all. I don't play that game. I think that that's nonsense. Not just in this case with Lamar, but period. I think that the notion that someone is good in the regular season and bad in the playoffs is silly. What happens is you play better teams and it gets harder, and most of the time, eventually, someone's going to lose without winning a championship. Having said that, my concern for this offense is today what it has always been, and it has been the exact same since the day it started. I think when you operate the way that they do, your margin for error is minuscule. And I think it's really hard to win titles. There's a reason why teams that are not traditional pocket-passing teams so rarely are the last team standing. And when you shut Jackson down, his worst game as a ball carrier this year in the 30s in this game, and when you do a good job disguising some things against him, he had his worst quarterback rating, it's curtains. And so I just think that they are not quite as traditional as at some point you have to be. Now, if they have that club in the bag and you can just have them stand in the pocket and throw against teams, then you do whatever you want the rest of the season. But they've never proven that they have it. And I don't think it's that he can't win in the playoffs. You see it in the regular season occasionally. The Browns or somebody else will do it to them. And they lose those games too. It's a matchup thing where it's Lamar Jackson gets to run around and be a dual threat or they lose. Period.
So you mentioned, I want to go to the Bills' perspective on this. I think both sides of the ball, their coordinators, did an excellent job of maximizing and using the resources at their disposal. And here's what I mean. You mentioned Baltimore's defense, right? The previous week, they spent all the resources saying, not Derrick Henry, nobody else. We don't care. It's not going to be Derrick Henry. They left A.J. Brown one-on-one on the outside a couple times, and maybe Tennessee missed some opportunities there. So The Bills said, we're not running into that. We have no interest in running into that. Now, they didn't put up a ton of points, and all the hot takers were out. The run the dang ball folks, when they only ran it 3 times, they put up 3 points. Meanwhile, Baltimore ran it 18 times and only put up 3 points, but that gets ignored, I guess, when it comes to running the ball. You only establish it when it works or whatever, who knows. But I thought that was interesting. The other side of the ball, when you look at what the Buffalo's defense did, they haven't been great most of the season. But here's what they did do. They said, we don't care if it's Dobbins. We don't care if it's Edwards. We don't care if it's Mark Andrews, Willie Snead, or whomever. Guys are going to be open. Here's what will not beat us. Lamar Jackson running the football. That's what our resources are dedicated to. Those are the backbreaking plays. Those are the ones that change games, the huge chunk plays that come out of the running game or the passing game. It will not beat us today. That was the plan. They executed to perfection.
And I believe that that's how you beat the Ravens. September, October, November, or January. Doesn't matter. If Lamar Jackson is not flying around in his cape, you know, as a rusher, I don't think they beat you. It's that simple. And you've seen in their playoff losses that that's what has ultimately happened. All right, so we got through the two games on Saturday. Let's get to Sunday's slate next. The Chiefs surviving a scare from the Browns, and Tom Brady and Tampa Bay headed to the NFC title game, another excruciating playoff loss, and maybe the final playoff loss for Drew Brees in his illustrious career. You're listening to Grant and Danny.
We are Grant and Danny for our pals at Window Nation. They're kicking off a new year with their most popular deal to help you afford new Window Nation windows. So you're probably going, what is it? How? I'll tell you. Call today. You call today and you make no payments for 2 full years and at half price, but that's not all. You get 2 free windows for every 2 you buy and make no down payment, make no payments at all, and pay no interest for 2 full years. You cannot beat this deal.
Window Nation, 000, buy 2, get 2 free. The offer ends soon. Call 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com today. Get 2 free windows for every 2 you buy, no limit. 0 down payment, 0 payments, and 0% interest for 2 entire years. Start the new year and get these new windows at incredible savings. Call Window Nation at 866-90-NATION, 866-90-NATION, or go to Window Nation.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
.com, and when you do, tell me, Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on this Football Monday, looking back at what was a tremendous weekend. Final Four set in the National Football League. We just worked our way through Saturday with the Green Bay Packers winning by 2 touchdowns over the Rams, and the Bills topping the Ravens 17-3 final, dominant defensive effort. Leslie Frazier, the defensive coordinator of the Bills, kind of the flavor of the week right now in the NFL as a coaching candidate. He apparently is still in consideration for the Texans job. Maybe he'll get a game ball when we give out our top 3 performers, game balls, gassers to the best and the worst of the weekend coming up a little bit later in the hour. All right, Danny, let's get to the first of the 2 games on Sunday, the Chiefs and the Browns. Kudos to Cleveland. They made this a game. They actually benefited, I thought, from some luck in that the Chiefs were without a bunch of players to start the game. Pat Mahomes, in a scary scene, got knocked out of the game, was woozy, looked like he was concussed and didn't know what day it was. Apparently, though, and I actually buy this, I don't know if you do, it wasn't that he got hit in the head and was legit concussed as much as he got something pinched in his neck. If you look at it, he was basically being, like, in a chokehold, grabbed by the neck and pulled backwards, and he lost his balance and equilibrium. But supposedly, they think he'll be ready to go this coming week. He gets knocked out of the game. The Chiefs survive in advance. That was a brilliant win for Kansas City. With the deck stacked against them, Cleveland had all the momentum at one point. Chad Henne's coming off the bench, who hadn't really played much in the league since 2013. It looked like the stars were aligning for the Browns. And that's when championship teams bow their neck. And without Mahomes to save the day, they had their other stars step up and make enough plays.
It's a different game if the worst rule in sports didn't exist. It's a different game if when you fumble the ball for 99.9 yards in the field of play and it goes out of bounds, it reverts to where the fumble was. We just figure it out. It's no big deal. It just reverts to the team that fumbled it or touched it last, and there's no problem. But if you fumble it through the end zone, not only do you lose the football, but the other team gains 20 yards of field position. I'll never understand why people think it's okay. I'll never understand why it's not changed, why it's not the first order of business when the NFL smart folks get together in the offseason and say, this is way too harsh of a penalty. I understand. If you want to change possession, okay, but I just can't believe it's been this way and nobody seems to think twice about it. So as the Cleveland Browns receiver is diving to get into the end zone for a potential touchdown, the Kansas City Chiefs defensive player, I think it was Sorensen, leads with the crown of his helmet, should have been a penalty. Ball goes out of bounds through the end zone. Now it's no longer Cleveland's ball in what would have been a massive touchdown for Cleveland to storm back into this game, where they only ended up losing by 5 points. Tremendous, tremendous swing. And in the playoffs, you need those kind of things to break your way. But on the Kansas City side of it, GP, real quick, you're 100% right. This is a – we know you can win when everything is awesome and you score 40 points. And everybody's doing sideline laughter and your offense is so great, etc. Can you win when things aren't ideal? And nothing was ideal for them this in this game. As you mentioned, Pat Mahomes goes out. Really, really scary scene. I just hope he's okay. No Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You're relying on the shell of Le'Veon Bell and the second Williams brother, who's not as good as the first Williams guy. Whatever, right? And you find a way to get yourself a W through brilliant play calling and design, and the defense that steps up a little bit. A gut check win for them, to say the least. Congrats to the Cleveland Browns. They were impressive. And for people like me that doubted that they would be able to turn their corner culturally, I think they did that, and they got nothing to be ashamed of.
No, they absolutely don't. But it also leaves you kicking yourself today because it was there for you. You make one play that they're not able to here or there, whether it's a stop on the fourth and a foot a couple times, or maybe you decide not to punt on fourth and nine if you're Kevin Stefanski to give them the ball back. For the record, I didn't hate that decision. If Mahomes was playing, I wouldn't give the Chiefs the ball back. But with Henne, I think I probably would have. Still, it backfired and ended up being their undoing. I liked the way Baker Mayfield played. He had one terrible interception. That was his huge mistake for the game. And against the Chiefs, you can make the case that that's one too many. But for the most part, I thought he was pretty dialed in, and he was throwing darts. And he looked like a quarterback you can win playoff games against elite teams with. They got their run game going to start the second half with Nick Chubb. Never really got Kareem Hunt unlocked against his former team. Chubb dropped three passes out of the backfield in the passing game, by the way. I know that the design often is with Chubb, maybe you get the opponent thinking run, and then you use him out of the backfield because he can do that. But
it didn't look good.
I'd like to see Hunt, get some of those targets, some of those screens. He's a little bit better in that regard. But yeah, the Browns, an 11-win team, first year under Stefanski, probably going to win Coach of the Year. It's a shame it had to end this way, because while most of us thought they were going to lose, I think a lot of us thought they'd get blown out. And then when Mahomes got knocked out of the game, and at one point they've got the ball with a chance to go take the lead in the fourth quarter, you're thinking Bills, Browns, AFC title game? What world is this? This is the strangest season of all time. But again, you got to give the Chiefs credit with all the injuries. How about Chad Henne? 2013 was the last time he completed a fourth down throw to move the sticks, and he did it on fourth and a foot. How about Andy Reid? Now, I'll knock Andy Reid, by the way, because he was asking Pat Mahomes to run designed when he was hobbling, had his hurt foot, and he gave him an option, kept the ball where he got hurt on that play. I thought that was ridiculous that he's even running the ball. What are you doing? You have running backs for a reason. Please hand them the ball if you want to run the football. Having said that, I don't know another coach in the league. The play after Mahomes gets hurt, backup quarterback coming off the bench ice cold in Chad Henne, fourth and a foot at about midfield, minus side of the field, that you I'm screaming in the living room, pumped up. It's fourth and a half yard. You know, every dinosaur in the world is telling you got to punt it. Tony Romo on the broadcast, who's Nostradamus, you know, calling every play, says, they're never going
to
snap it.
Get him offsides, Jim.
Jim, they're never going to snap it. They're just going to try to jump. Jim, he's going to dummy call him. Jim, snap immediately. Throw for the first down. Tyreek Hill slides for a first down right by the sideline to keep the clock moving. Andy Reid is playing chess. He's the King's Gambit. And everyone else is playing checkers. I love that dude.
So I tried to explain this to my wife, who wasn't really interested in football after her Ravens lost over the weekend, but she was watching in that moment. And she was a little bit confused. She's like, I thought they weren't going to run a play because of what Romo was saying. Romo did make one very keen, Robert Earl Keen observation during that setup on that fourth down play where he goes, because he's so bubbling and excited, but he's like, look at the body language, Jim. The fact that 11 actors, this is not a Broadway play. They're not doing Hamilton or Cats. 11 guys made it seem like, yeah, we're just going to try to get you guys offsides. We're going to half-ass this thing. We're not really going to do it. And then all of a sudden, everybody's flat-footed, and then they ran the play. And that play is Tyreek Hill with in the slot, one-on-one, can go anywhere, and he's the fastest kid alive.
Quick
and
out.
He fakes inside, and he's outside. He's open. Pitch and catch, easy, all day. You win the football game. You just play to win the football game. I loved that play so much, I rewound it, because all I knew I was just missing kneel downs. I didn't care about the kneel downs. I rewound it so many times, and I wanted to watch if there were any tells. Nobody gave it away. Everybody was acting the entire time. It tells you it's been rehearsed. It's been drilled down into them, into their subconscious. You will make it look like you're not going to run a play. You're going to half-ass this thing. Sell, 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 sell.
Well,
you're not running
snap,
a football play. Oh,
most
it was
of
great.
Them just kind of stood
yes,
around.
And it was like so great.
Nine guys standing there and two are playing football. And that was Henne who's got to throw it and Hill who's
so
got to catch it. And he's wide open because the Browns did not expect them to snap the ball. Like everyone else in the stadium and watching on TV didn't expect them to snap the ball. Someone says to me, you know, you'd be killing Andy Reid if they didn't get it. Incorrect.
Nope.
I say all the time, and people yell at me that I'm an idiot when coaches do things that backfire like that. It was still correct. This is what should be done. They still have to go score a touchdown, by the way. And, yes, they only have to go 48 yards to do it, rather than if you punt and they got to go the length of the field. But I'll take my chances ending the game with my elite weapons and my offense. By the way, you talked about earlier in the game the controversial play, and you're right. Decided by 5 points in the end, this game, a touchdown would have been scored and or, you know, if the rule is different, maybe you get a first and goal situation. But it was receiver Rashard Higgins reaching for the goal line on the touchback. This audio is via ESPN's 850 WKNR in the Buffalo.
Higgins to the right, Mayfield to throw, drop, look, fire, and it's caught wide open at the five. It's Higgins, he fumbles into the end zone. Let's see what they're going to call. It's a touchback. He fumbled into the end zone and out of the end zone. Kevin Stefanski shakes his head. Mayfield threw a strike. Higgins caught it in his attempt to get into the end zone. The ball spit out. We'll see if he's down at all. As he reaches the ball out, he got hit. The ball went over the pylon, rolled through the end zone. Sorensen hit him at the 1 yard line, and then it went out of the end zone.
By a fumble that went through the end zone, which by rule results in a touchback.
Oh my goodness. Kansas City gets the ball back. Unbelievable.
If you like that rule, you should eat grapes all day and nothing else. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You should have the same diet as an iguana. That
10-point swing.
You don't get to eat any of the delicious foods we have at our disposal. You fumble forward. I understand you don't want to reward that by saying, okay, you recovered in the end zone, it's a touchdown. Nobody can tell me that the defense that doesn't recover the fumble, does not recover the fumble, should get possession, number one, because everyone says, well, you didn't recover your own fumble. Why do you get possession? Why does the other team that never possessed the ball, I was the last one to possess the ball, in every other sport, if I'm the last one to possess the ball and it goes out, that means something, right? I'm the last one to possess the ball. You don't give it to the other people. And, oh, by the way, give them a fifth of the football field.
It's unbelievable.
In space, like worst case scenario, if you wanted to change this rule and say the defense gets the ball, which, by the way, I'd categorically disagree with, but they get it at the goal line. So now they've got to get out of their own way, or it might be a safety. And so instead of giving up 6 points on a touchdown, maybe they only give up 2 points and it's a 4 point swing. Okay, fine. To then just set them up first and 10 from the 20, it's the most out of whack, outrageous rule in sports. And there are very few, but some people that are just okay with it. And I'll never understand it. And Danny, one of the things you hear about this a lot is, well, it's one of the only rules for the defense. What do you just want the offense to have all the rules? I'm not going to keep a terrible rule just because the defense gets one. No, how about we change other rules if we need to?
Yeah.
But this is a bad rule, period. It doesn't the means does not justify the end here.
It's so shocking.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
Again, the what I come back to is logical. You laid it out very well. What's the logic is a fumble, the consequences of a fumble are true for 99 yards. Right? If the fumbling team, it goes out of bounds, you retain possession. Is that fair? Let's examine that. Let's have a jump ball situation like basketball. Whatever, right? But that's how the rule is applied.
Also,
very
I would
evenly,
say, yes,
it
it's fair because I had it, and yeah. Now it's out of bounds, and you never got it. So you don't get it now, yes,
right, you don't get it either. So for 99 yards, that's the rule. Then the rule not only just changes slightly, it's an exact opposite. Plus the reward of a stiff of penalties you can offer. Typical penalties are 15 yards. This is a 20-yard plus enforcement for the team that did nothing. Now, I know they forced the fumble. That's a major achievement. They did not recover the fumble. If they recover the fumble in the end zone, touchback. Oh, it's such a wonderful touchback. Allow the touchback. Celebrate the touchback. Let's all go in front of that television and we can pose. Yes, hooray for the touchback. If a dude fumbles the ball out of bounds anywhere else, just goes back to the team and we never think twice about it, right? It's what should have been that J.D. McKissic catch against Tampa Bay that they ruled incomplete. Ball should have been a fumble out of bounds. We never think about it. Imagine if he fumbles it out of bounds and they applied the rule the same way with the end zone. Not only is it no longer Washington ball right there, it's Tampa ball, and then you march 20 yards in the opposite direction. It's the largest and stiffest, most out-of-whack penalty that's assessed, and that's what it is, a de facto penalty that's assessed to the team possessing the ball in sports. It's an outrageous rule. Every second that it's on the books is an insult to the intelligence of sports fans everywhere. Please be upset as I am.
The only thing that is more annoying to me than the rule is when you find the one guy in every crowd who likes the rule.
Then don't fumble.
Right, that's it. Like,
then
you
hold
fumbled.
Onto the ball.
You fumbled. Cool. It's the you don't want him to celebrate, don't give up the home run guy. Like, there's one of those in every crowd. I'm sure you're fun to hang out with. It's a terrible rule.
Best
go find someone else,
because
I'm going to talk to the people who are interesting. I'm going to talk to the people who like bacon cheeseburgers for a couple of minutes. Oh, my God, that rule. And as soon as it happened, I threw my hands up in the air and just stared at the ceiling. And I didn't care, really. I mean, I've had the Browns plus 10, but I wanted the Chiefs
pool, yeah.
to win. I mean, I didn't care, right? I'm watching football. I want it to be a good game. And I'm thinking, that poor dude, Rashard Higgins. Like, you're scratching, you're clawing, you're fighting for that inch. Living and dying for that inch. The inches we need are all around us. And you're getting penalized that desperately? Why does anyone try to score?
No one should try to score.
You should
unless
just
it's fourth down and you have no other chances, do not reach that ball forward ever.
You should turtle like you're Deshaun Jackson against the Packers and give me the effort of an F student in high school who has no designs on going to college.
But
just
motorcycle.
Fall out of bounds. Just Tyreek Hill it so that you can keep the clock running. Why would anyone try to score with that rule? It makes no sense. By the way, a couple of notes from the game. Pat Mahomes rushed for a touchdown in three straight playoff games. Nobody's done that at the quarterback position since Steve Young in 94-95. Travis Kelce, now second on the all-time list. Touchdowns by a tight end with 7. Gronk is number 1 with 12. The Browns lose a fumble at the 1 for the first time since the fumble.
Yeah,
Ernest Biner in the 1987 AFC title game when they were down 7 points with a little over a minute left. And I mentioned the Chad Henne stat. 2013 was the last time he was making plays like the one he made to put the game on ice. And by the way, that 13-yard scramble, which I thought was 14, I thought it was a first down.
What a play.
But how great was that for that guy? He's got kids now that are old enough to, like, be there and high-five him after the game and give him a hug and tell him he's awesome. Can you imagine what that must have felt like for Chad Henne yesterday?
Great job, Dad. Family. Now drive me home, son. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, that is cool. All right, one more game to get to. Bucks and the Saints. We're Grant and Danny recapping the weekend that was in the NFL.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Bucks lost to the Saints twice this season, including getting embarrassed on national TV several weeks ago, and they won when it mattered. Hard to beat the same time a team three times, obviously, but the Saints lose by 10, 30-20. Tom Brady throws for a buck 99 and a pair of scores. He is on to the NFC Championship game. Same result, different conference for Brady. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. So this is the last game we have not yet gotten into. Some of the particulars here. The Saints led 20-13 in the second half and were marching. Third and two on a slant to Jared Cook. They pick up a first down. They're going to have a first and 10 just inside the 40-yard line of Tampa Bay. And at worst, they're going to go up 10 points if they can get a handful of yards, you know, kicking indoors on carpet. Probably have a chance, who knows, to go take a two-touchdown lead. And at that point, the Bucs are in big, big trouble. Jared Cook fumbles, and it wasn't like him being bad, Tampa did nothing to earn it. It was an unbelievable play by their sensational rookie safety, Antoine Winfield Jr., so you give him all the credit for the peanut punch. But that fumble changes the entire game. The Bucs get the ball, they go score immediately, it's 20-20, and they would go on to score 10 more unanswered points and put the game away. Drew Brees in his final game, very likely, Danny, reports surfacing right before kickoff that he would be retiring after the game. Picked off three times. Two of those interceptions were on him, and they were both bad. Tom Brady, throwing the football, didn't really necessarily have to do a lot, but was very much in control from start to finish, and they were plus +3 in turnover margin. When that happens, you win football games. Now 52-3 in the playoffs, teams that are plus +3 or better in turnover margin.
Yeah, it's a pretty good indicator. I hate that this is the end, if it is, for Drew Brees and how it ended. This year, just the last 2 years, really fought through really significant injuries. And again, the only thing he and I have in common is that I know what it feels like to have that broken rib and the punctured lung and everything. And he had it 10 times worse than me. And he's back. He's my age, playing in the NFL, quarterback sneaking, taking shots, etc. It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous what he's been able to do in his career. Multiple times over, counted out. When he had that shoulder problem leaving San Diego, nobody was really interested. And he and Sean Payton get together and they make Hall of Fame, beautiful, incredible music, and he's one of the all-time greats. And I just hate that that's the last taste, right, is those three interceptions, backbreakers, et cetera. From a Tampa Bay perspective, two guys really jump out at me in this football game. Devin White, that is a bad, bad dude. I mean, wow. I don't know who he reminds me of, to be honest with you. I mean, he's that short fire plug looking guy, you know, like kind of the old school, the middle linebacker, the Mike Singletary type guys. But he runs around like he's a safety. I mean, he flies around, and the interceptions, the hits, led the team in tackles. I thought he was the best player for either team yesterday, just flashing constantly. And you mentioned him, Antoine Winfield Jr., I think is a sensational, sensational player for Tampa. He's only going to get better. I thought he was outstanding in that game as well. Made the game-changing play with that the peanut punch.
Yeah, he had six tackles and that forced fumble. I didn't really notice him much otherwise, to be completely honest, but that play won them the football game. I think if he doesn't make it, their season's over right now. And because he did, they're going to the NFC Championship game. And by the way, Devin White, 11 tackles with an interception. He also had a tackle for loss and a pass defended. He returned his interception inside the 15, and that's when they really put the game away by double digits. When we get into the game balls and the gassers, he'll come back up, hint, hint, because I think he's one of the best players of the weekend. Tom Brady, though, in 16 games, a full season's worth in division round play, 14 wins now, so he'll be on to his 14th conference final. He joins Johnny Unitas as one of two quarterbacks to start conference championship games in three different decades, because he did it in 2000 and in 2010, and now on to the 2020 season in 2021. Unitas did it as well, and those are the two guys. I can't get over how well he's aged. I'm not even talking about as a quarterback, which is obvious. I mean, he threw for 40 touchdowns this season, and you know he had one of his better passing seasons as he finally was surrounded by some of the best weaponry in the NFL, which he lacked for years and years in New England, as he and Bill Belichick won so many titles without great weapons on offense largely. But just watching him in his press conference last night, like, Drew Brees on the field looks 50. He does. He lacks the arm strength and the zip, and he's crow-hopping into throws, and their offense is a shell of itself because of what he's unable to do now. And you don't have any of that with Tom Brady, but maybe it's because he's never eaten, a carb. You know, I don't know why.
Right, I don't know how.
He's got the, like, my wife's watching. She's like, he's the best skin. Oh, my God. Like, he looks so good. And I'm like, is that what it is? I don't know.
Easy with that.
I mean, he just looks great.
I know.
He's so amazing looking, and he's married to Giselle, and, like, he doesn't age. There's no white in his hair. It's insane. He's 43 years old, that guy. 43. He looks like he's 29.
He threw, again, I just want to talk about this. I know he had great weapons. I know he had a great system. I know everything was great. A 43-year-old guy threw for 40 touchdowns this year. That would shatter anything that I have seen from a Washington Redskins now football team quarterback. Their record is 31 by Sonny Jurgensen, set before they had face masks, basically. And it was one bar, you know? And he just threw it because he didn't care. He was just throwing it to whoever. He threw like 20 picks that season, whatever the hell it was. We don't do – we've taken it for granted. We just kind of went, yeah, he's got a lot of weapons. It's fine. He's 43 years old. He's in the NFC title game. It's amazing. It shouldn't be happening this way. It should look like Drew Brees. No arm strength left. Everything's been broken once, twice, six ways from Sunday. And Drew Brees, by the way, is good at avoiding contact. He's one of the guys that should be to regular human beings. Look, kids, you can play into your 40s. Look what Brees has been able to do, getting by with smarts and preparation. Drew Brees looks like you're supposed to look at my age. Tom Brady does not. It's ridiculous what he's still doing. It's ridiculous.
Couple things on the Saints. So their biggest play of the game came with Brees not involved. Jameis Winston threw a 56-yard touchdown pass. That was actually their longest play of the entire year. Beautiful design, beautiful execution. They just ripped the play from the Bears, who ran it against them last week. So Sean Payton's best play of the day was stolen from Matt Nagy. Take that for what it's worth. But New Orleans put the finishing touches on a four-year run with 49 regular season wins. That's the most ever by a team over 4 years that won't play in a Super Bowl. It's crazy that this era, this iteration of the Saints, nothing to show for all their success and dominance in the South. And Brees will retire with just that one title. And we're talking about now 10 years ago. All the numbers, all the performance, all the years since where they've been 11, 12, 13 wins good, and he's been an MVP candidate, and they have nothing to show for it since that one championship over the Colts on a pick six of Peyton Manning many, many years ago. Crazy to think about.
So, 100%.
There's your look back at the weekend that was. There are a lot of other angles we can get into. We got the game balls and the gassers to give out. But next, let's actually talk about two quarterbacks that weren't playing this past weekend. Alex Smith was on 60 Minutes, and he said something pretty interesting about his future that we want to react to. Plus, Deshaun Watson. You and I are both on record as saying the Texans aren't actually going to trade him. This is just a lot of fodder and talk about nothing. Are we sure about that? Because it's starting to sound more and more like he might be dealt. We'll get into that next on G&D.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.